You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Yore and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Feud podcast. I'm your host, Keely Yore, joined by Shotgun Spratling and cousin of the pod, Chris Trevino. We have a fun show for you guys. We're hopefully, fingers crossed, previewing USC's matchup on Sunday afternoon against Washington State. We'll take stock of where USC sits, kind of at the halfway point of the season. It's kind of weird at this point. We'll get into that. And then we'll have some take it or leave it. And Chris, I believe you have an update on Turnover Traveler. Some drama ensued, and we'll get into that. But Shotgun, to start it off, I'm glad you're back. Chris and I were in the life raft by ourselves paddling away at the top of the show last week as you were at basketball, so glad to have you back manning one of the oars, if you will.
Hey, I came in and saved, you know, I was like the rescue squad, the Coast Guard coming in to save the back end of the podcast, right? Doesn't that count for something?
No, I mean, technically it was me who was drowning a little bit. Chris was my witness, but it's okay.
I think it was more like Castaway, and one of us was Wilson, and one of us was just lost. I think it was Keely, was just lost, and I needed her, and I just couldn't get back to her, but we made it through. We made it through.
It was a struggle last week, I'll give you that. But we're back, we had the full crew, and I'm excited about it. Like I said, USC is gearing up to play Washington State right now. It looks like things are trending in the right direction, but we did say that on last week's pod, and look where that went. But USC has had five rounds of tests in the last 3 days, and all have come back negative for USC's players. So far, so good, guys. What has been your takeaway? It's been a wild week. Shotgun, I guess let's start with you first, since we didn't get your thoughts last week on the pod. What has been your takeaways about USC's first COVID hiccup, if you will, and how they've kind of seemed to come out on the other side of this right now?
I mean, it's tough going through this situation. It's something that, you know, we've watched from afar for other schools go through it. And then USC goes through it. And, you know, it's tough for the players, especially the week that it happened, it being at Thanksgiving. You know, I feel bad for the guys that, you know, have made those sacrifices, not being able to be with their families and whatnot. And yet, you know, they don't get rewarded being able to play on Saturday. You know, they basically were in isolation on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to try to be able to play this week and next week as well because, you know, of the positive tests and the quarantine, the contact tracing. They didn't have enough players at the offensive line position, so they weren't able to play, and they basically had to be isolated for 4 days on a holiday weekend and had to sit out and, you know, while you're watching on social media and, you know, other people are with their families and you know, gathering and doing things that we don't recommend that you guys do necessarily, gathering with other people. But seeing those things on social media, and, you know, you have to basically be in your dorm room or your college room that, you know, without being able to be around people. So it was a tough week for that to happen to them, but it looks like things are going in the right direction, and that's good news for USC. You know, five times they've tested in the last 3 days as we're our recording, and, you know, no negatives for any of the players. So hopefully that means that USC has, you know, made their way through this and you know, nipped it in the bud as quickly as possible, and now are able to move on to playing football again.
Nope. Positive, all negatives is what you meant, Shaka. No negatives is what you said.
I'll say it backwards, sorry.
Yeah, no worries, just want to clarify there.
That's a positive, though, that there are no positives.
Sure.
Yeah, everything's going in the right direction. It was very surreal prepping for a game just from our end and then not having to cover a game. I just didn't know what to do with all this free time. It wasn't like a regularly scheduled bye week where we still had stuff and practice to cover. Couldn't cover anything really those last over the weekend. And, you know, we expected probably to have a cancellation, but it was still extremely weird to actually have it happen. And I'll be honest, I was a little bit bummed. I didn't get to see this USC team versus this Colorado team. That was a surprising team in the Pac-12 South. That was going to be a big game. I think coming into the season, if people told you that the Colorado game would be canceled for a COVID reason, most people would not think that'd be a big deal just because Colorado was not expected to be a contender in the Pac-12 South. But that was going to be a battle of the top two teams in the South. So we missed out on that opportunity moving forward.
Yeah, Chris, you mentioned the Pac-12 South and what that looks like. Shadi, as the resident knower of things, what does it mean for the Pac-12 South division that USC and Colorado didn't actually play each other?
Yeah, and we actually got a question about this too, you know, on Twitter. What happens if USC and Colorado both win out? Does USC still win the South? And that would be the case because they did not play each other, and because Colorado, basically because they didn't play Arizona State, you know, they're going to have one less division game than USC. They're going to have one less conference game. You know, the conference race, the tiebreaker would be very similar because both teams, if they went out, would be, you know, undefeated. USC would be 5-0, Colorado would be 4-0. Because of the tiebreaker rule, it would then end up going down to division games. And because USC will have played one more than them, having played that Arizona State game and Colorado not being able to play that, USC would get the advantage there. So because they don't play, the first tiebreaker is head-to-head. And because they haven't played head-to-head, it would go to conference division games. And because USC will have played one more, if both teams, you know, are able to play their games on the way out, then USC gets the nod there. So they get the advantage just by not playing.
I was about to say, how does that make sense given that it's Colorado's games were canceled not of their own fault? So they just lose out, and when it comes to the head-to-head matchups?
It's 2020. Nothing really makes sense. Let's go ahead and state that. But, you know, look to the Big Ten. You know, the Ohio State could not get into their conference championship game because of, you know, other teams not having the potential of Michigan not being able to play next weekend and them not having the requisite number of games. The Pac-12 did it a little bit differently than the Big Ten. The Big Ten set a certain number that teams had to get to. The Pac-12 said, hey, it's going to be what, as long as you have a minimum of one less game than the average. So they, you know, they left a little bit more wiggle room, I think, there by doing that to be eligible for the conference championship game. So USC, if they play this weekend, then they will become eligible for a championship game. You know, the average right now is around four and a half, somewhere in between 4 and 4.5. So as long as USC gets to that fourth game, then they'll have enough and they'll be eligible.
Are you saying the Pac-12 did something better than the Big Ten?
Yeah, it happens occasionally. You know, it's rare that the Pac-12 does something better than, you know, than other conferences in the Power Five. But this one, I'll give them a little credit.
Sounds like Larry Scott's on the stock up train.
I think that train's already run into the canyon, off the tracks into the canyon.
The canyon. Now, as far as USC basically taking a forced bye, Clay Helton said that they have fresher legs now. Does this COVID bye change how you evaluate this team at all? Because I'll be honest, this kind of took me out of the college football zone a little bit. And it was like, okay, there's 3 games in, but what do you really make of this, you know? But then talking to Clay Helton today, and I asked him about, you know, what is it like preparing for Washington State when you know UCLA is right around the corner since you're losing one extra day. And he said, hey, we might have to play 3 games in 15 days, essentially, if you count in the Pac-12 championship. And it's like, all right, USC can still go to the Pac-12 championship. So put me back into the football mindset. But is it weird to now try and evaluate this team since it seems a little disjointed right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit disjointed just because it's 2020. It's COVID season. We knew this was going to happen and they'd be forced to maybe miss some days, miss some games, and kind of make that up on the back end. But I kind of look at it like you just said. It's just kind of like a bye week, and kind of take it like that. They are going to have to play Sunday, which obviously is a little bit weird, but I don't think it throws much of everything into disarray. Just a little bit of that, you lose a day basically, and it is nice just in terms of preparation because this is the first team they played where they've had tape of them this season, which I think will obviously help them moving forward. But I'm not. I don't see it as like a huge wrench in the cog of this season, but it is something to evaluate, especially when you're talking about those 15 days and maybe 3 games.
I think when you're looking at this week off, you know, it's similar. Washington State has had 2 weeks off, so I think there's the potential rust on both sides. I don't think it helps or hinders either team necessarily. It's just an extra bye week. It's not like, you know, one team was preparing all week for the other team. Oh, wait, Washington State did have an extra amount of time to prepare, but how much were they able to get on the practice field? Those type things are playing into this. USC is going to be hindered more by the fact that they're not able to get their full roster on the practice field this week, you know, with some of the quarantine and contact tracing. That's much more of a concern than necessarily just a regular rust or, you know, anything there. it's unfortunate for USC, the timing of this, because you felt like they had taken some strides forward in that Utah game, especially on the defensive side, to come right after that. That's unfortunate for them. We'll see if they can bounce back and get right back to that, or if there is, you know, a little bit of time where it looks like they haven't played in a couple weeks. So, you know, they had this week off. Hopefully they rested up, because like Chris said, if they take care of business, again, that's a big if with USC, but if they take care of business, they're going to play three games in 13 days. You know, they play Sunday, they can play next Saturday against UCLA, and then potentially play in the Pac-12 championship the Friday after that. So three games in 13 days, that's going to push them a little bit there. Short weeks back-to-back, so they better have rested up. And, you know, the fact that they may have to practice some of those younger guys, and those younger guys may have to step up and play a little bit this week, you know, that might be a positive, knowing that, you know, you may have to, you know, lean on some of them a little bit more with two short weeks back-to-back.
I was going more overall, Shotgun, in the sense that, is it hard for you? Because we were thinking about maybe doing mid-season stock up, stock down, but it's just kind of hard. How do you evaluate this team three games in when there's kind of a break in the momentum, if you will?
It's interesting. You kind of even think about it like a hockey season, you know, when they sometimes have the Olympic break in the middle of it. How do you evaluate? Do you just look at, you know, a first half of the season, and you look at a second half, and you look at them separate? You know, in some sports seasons, there's a first half champion and a second half champion, and they match up. You know, it's interesting in that regard. It's such a short season, though, that I think you just look at it all together and just factor it in. You don't really, because you only have six games, you don't go, oh, we got midseason awards or anything going on here with USC, when USC is at three games and there's other teams across the country that are at nine. So you look at it and you look at USC and say, are they making progress? And then where are they? And then can they make that jump and continue to make progress after this little bit of break? That's the big question for me.
And the crazy part, too, is basically like, don't look now, but USC is the kind of the sole Pac-12 representative right now. If you look at the college football playoff rankings, with Oregon losing to Oregon State. Shotgun, I know you have some takes about these rankings, but it's just weird. All of a sudden, USC is kind of the lone representative, even though that doesn't really mean much, because the Pac-12's chance in the CFP is basically over at this point.
Yeah, it was lost when Oregon lost to Oregon State. USC's chances were lost when they struggled against Arizona State and Arizona, especially the Arizona game. That pretty much put the nail in the coffin. It would take some wild, crazy things to happen, basically everyone losing, which is not going to happen, for USC to make some big jumps in there. Now, they can move their way up. They could finish in the top 10. You know, they could even finish in like the top 8. If they show some big strides going forward, if they come out in this game against Washington State and show they're a dominant team and run away with a game, you know, it's something they haven't done. Washington State showed some positive things. UCLA showed some positive things. If they dominate those two teams, I think that would look good in the eyes. And then you have a potential of playing an undefeated Washington team or playing an Oregon team that's rebounded and just come off a top 25 win against Washington. You know, those two teams are going to play or are set to play the week before the Pac-12 championship. So that would be a top 25 matchup right now, and then the potential of USC playing a top 25 team there. So that would give them a chance to boost their resume going into the bowl season. So that's an opportunity to move forward. The college football playoff rankings are terrible, in my opinion, because of the hypocrisy of it. And it's hard. It's hard this year. I understand how you measure a team with 9 wins playing lesser teams in the Sun Belt versus a team with 3 wins in the Pac-12 or a team with 4 wins in the Big Ten. You know, a Wisconsin team that's got 2 wins and 1 loss, they're ahead of USC. You know, USC drops 2 spots and they're jumped by 4 teams after not playing. Ohio State didn't play. Cincinnati didn't play. They didn't drop. Obviously, they have a little bit better resume with a couple more games in there than USC. Okay, I understand that. Well, why is Wisconsin higher? They have the same number of games as USC and they have a loss. Their loss is to Northwestern. Is that what you're really right? Yeah, we lost to Northwestern. We get higher in the rankings because, come on, really? It's Northwestern. It's still Northwestern. Even though Northwestern has looked, you know, like a top 25 team this year, second half of the top 25, even though they're ranked higher than that. Why are they higher? And why is North Carolina, after losing for their third game, moving up 2 spots? It doesn't make any sense. Hey, yeah, we lost to Notre Dame. You lost by 2 touchdowns. You also have losses to 2-6 Florida State and 4-4 Virginia. Don't give me Don't give me this crap that they should move up because they lost to a good team. Come on. You got to beat good teams to move up rankings, which is why USC is at 20. I don't have a problem with USC being at 20. I have a problem with other teams moving ahead of them that haven't improved their resumes. So, you know, the college football playoff rankings would be stocked down for me. The Pac-12 overall is stocked down for me because, you know, they're getting no love at all. You can even say the football in the West is down. You know, BYU is getting no love. Now, BYU, great opportunity this weekend. College game day, going to be there at Coastal Carolina. Because of a cancellation, they're going to get to play that game. So we'll see if the West football, if they win that game, gets any love next week.
I just want to point out, I hope all the listeners just appreciated what just Shotgun just did. I don't know if Keely's going to edit it, but that man just went what felt like 50 minutes off the dome talking about the college football rankings. That was just, I just got to give it up a couple claps. That was impressive. You don't get to see performances like that every day. That was, he had his jaw set. He came ready to play. I said I was never going to entertain college football USC talk after the Arizona loss, but I'll make 3 points. It ain't happening, and we're moving on.
I agree with those 3 points, and I would also like to point out that I made it through that whole rant with Keely giving me about 4 wrap-it-up signs.
Yeah, don't encourage this behavior, Chris. This is horrible. He just blows past every signal I give him. It's awful.
It needed to be said. It needed to be said.
The only thing I want in life is Shotgun to win an Academy Award and to have him just go on while the playoff music is just going.
No.
And he just goes. We need playoff music for him. That's what we need.
No. False. Alrighty, I'm circling this back to USC's future matchup against Washington State. And to do so, I'm going to do it with a Twitter question we got from Jesus, who says, how does USC stop Jaden Delora? What challenge does he bring for this USC defense?
Well, he's one of those QBs that USC has struggled with in the past. He's a dynamic playmaker. He can make plays with his legs. You know, if you recall, he was a guy USC offered out of high school last year. He was one of those last-minute Hail Mary QB offers when they were desperately trying to get someone in the 2020 class. USC probably would have been pretty happy if they were able to pull him in, considering the way he's been playing so far with Washington State. I would say front runner for that Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year, freshman Offensive Player of the Year with that team. But yeah, it's going to come down to keeping him in the pocket, not letting him get out, make plays with his legs, keep the play going, extending plays, and, you know, building confidence for this offense.
Yeah, Jaden Delora, you know, another guy USC went after, like Chris said, and you give credit to USC's quarterback recruiting. Those guys that they've thrown those last minute offers after. Have been pretty good. You know, another one of those guys was Dylan Gabriel at UCF, and he's been, you know, crushing it for the last couple of years. So, you know, when USC goes after a guy, especially late when they see that senior tape, a guy like Jackson Dart in Utah, you know, that they've gone after later in the process, you know, those guys have turned out to be pretty good players. So we'll see if USC can pull in Jackson Dart before signing day with two other guys already committed, Miller Moss and Jake Garcia. But getting back to the question of Jaden Delora, you know, yes, you got to try to keep him in the pocket. But I think the biggest question for me and the biggest kind of matchup in this game is going to be Todd Orlando's pressures against Delora, because there's two ways to attack a young quarterback: is to sit everyone back and force them to beat you underneath, and, you know, force them to try to throw in his own coverage. You know what BYU did against Keaton Slovis, what they did against Matt Fink, who, you know, in his first road start, or you attack them and try to get them, speed them up and force them to make quick decisions and, you know, quicker pace than they were at high school. And that's what Todd Orlando is going to do. That's what he's known to do. That's his style of defense. So can they confuse him? It's not just about bringing pressure, but it's bringing pressure where Delora doesn't know where to look for it at. You know, he doesn't know where to look for that hole that's being vacated. Because the biggest thing when someone brings pressure is to try to throw right behind where they just vacated their, you know, create a soft spot by bringing an extra defender. So if you can bring it from different directions, he doesn't know exactly where it's coming from. That makes it harder to immediately assess it and attack it. So USC, they bring pressures from all different places. They blitz pretty much everyone on their defense so far this season. So can they confuse Jaden Delora and keep him, you know, can they cause some hesitancy in him as he's trying to make his reads? If they can, then I think that they, you know, that they'll win this game pretty easily. But that's going to be the key thing, you know. And then after you create that pressure is then staying in those pass lanes to keep him from getting out and creating the extra opportunities for his team.
Why do you think USC has struggled with quarterbacks who, I wouldn't even say mobile, just quarterbacks that can somehow find a way outside the pocket? Because Grant Gunnell wasn't this run, like, Clay Helton made a point to be like, he's no Jaden Daniels. And then suddenly in the second half, they had to make Raymond Scott a spy. And I know some USC fans were like, oh, it's Clancy Pendergast defense 2.0. But why do you think this has been a theme we've seen with this type of USC personnel, if you will?
I think one is you have a new defense. So guys are trying to show out a little bit more for new defensive staff. I think they're over anxious after 11 months off or whatever it is that they weren't able to play. So I think they were trying to attack and do a little bit too much in those first couple games. I think they did a lot better against Utah of staying in their lanes. They gave up the one big third down conversion quarterback scramble. But other than that, they were they stayed in their lanes and were able to make the plays to get off the field on third downs. And give credit to Todd Orlando for making the adjustments the last 2 weeks. They have not given up a third down conversion in the second half the last 2 weeks. So that's making the adjustments when needed and being able to find ways to get the opponent off the field after they, the first game against Arizona State, Jaden Daniels was able to pick up several of those in the first half. Grant Gunnell was able to pick some up, but not in the second half and not Utah in the second half either.
In the broader sense, how would you compare this Wazoo offense in relation to the Mike Leach offenses we've seen in the past couple of years?
When you look at it, the run and shoot style and the air raid, they're very similar. There's a lot of similarities of what they want to do. They want to be able to attack horizontally and vertically. They want to be able to use the entire field. They want to spread you out as much as possible. The run and shoot, a lot of short passes. They're going to run the ball more than a Mike Leach style. So Mike Leach is the purest of pure air raids. The running back is going to catch the ball more than he's probably going to run it. He's more about dividing up equal amount of touches between the five eligible receivers. Now, does that touch come as a carry? Does that come as a swing pass? He doesn't care. He just wants to divide them up pretty equally. The run and shoot, they're going to run the ball a little bit more. You've seen that with Deion McIntosh the first couple games. He's running for over 100 yards. But they've got two receivers that are in the top four of the Pac-12 as well. So they're going to spread the ball around at the same amount, but it's going to be in a different kind of form. They're running the ball instead of throwing swing passes all the time. And, they're trying to attack with four wide personnel almost all the time. That's the difference. One of the big differences from Nick Rolovich is he's really got that 10 personnel where you have one running back, no tight ends, four receivers. The air raid, oftentimes you use that tight end. You're using, Graham Harrell prefers to have a tight end on the field and a running back at all times. He wants to be three wide, whereas Rolovich's style is they're going to be in 2x2 or 3x1 wide receiver sets, and they're going to roll with their wide receivers and try to get the ball in those playmakers' hands, get the ball in space, and let them try to make some plays.
And I think a big X factor for Washington State this week is that the possibility of getting Max Borghi, I think I'm saying that right, Max Borghi back. He's been dealing with a back issue this year, returned to practice this week. Obviously, he's a special playmaker when the ball is in his hands. I believe he caught like 86 passes last year or something like that. So that's another dynamic weapon USC might have to worry about. We don't know exactly if he's going to play. The fact that he's back practicing is a good sign. I believe Washington State Twitter was leaning towards him possibly not playing, but we'll see come Sunday.
He is a huge addition to them. Now, I don't know exactly how he's going to fit in Nick Rolovich's offense without seeing him in it yet, but he is one. He's probably the most underrated athlete, maybe in the nation. He is such a dynamic player. You just get the ball and he makes guys miss in space, get the ball to him in different ways. He can do different things and catch the ball in the backfield. You can do a lot of different things with him. He's kind of Christian McCaffrey light, I would say. I don't know if he's as physical between the tackles as McCaffrey, and can be as high of a draft pick as McCaffrey, and he's not as big, but he has a lot of those same characteristics of how you can use him in so many different ways as a returner, as a receiver, as you can put him in the slot, you can do different things with him. He's just a unique athlete to have on the field, and nobody talks about him because he played in Mike Leach's system, and they always get yards and receptions. Well, I think people will see him being in a different system. They might see, oh, this guy actually can play. If he was playing for Oregon rather than Washington State, people would be talking about him all over the country.
I almost made the Christian McCaffrey drop as well, but I didn't want to get booed out of here. I'm glad my instincts were right if Shotgun said it.
to circle back to Jaden Delora for 2 seconds, because I forgot to say this when you guys were talking about him. Did you catch today or Thursday in Clay Helton's press conference how he said that kid's going to be a pain in the butt in this conference for the next couple of years? It was a little quick quip from Helton.
Yeah, that was the second time this week that Helton had mentioned that Washington State was going to be a pain in the butt, because he said Nick Rolovich he expects to be a pain in the butt for the Pac-12 going forward. He thought that was a really good hire by them, especially with the personnel they already had on the roster to be able to come in and be a similar but not the same type of system. And then, you know, Delora, he thinks is a guy that they recruited and thinks he's going to be really good, and he speaks really highly of him. He said he's a winner. Which Clay Helton said about, I think, every quarterback so far now.
You've taken real offense to that, Chuck, and you have to say it every
everyone
time.
Everyone can't be a winner. Just because you earn a starting spot doesn't make you a winner. Because he also said, well, Sam Darnold's a winner. We saw that, you know, from what he did at San Clemente and how they were terrible his junior year, his senior year, they were really good with him. Well, how far does that stretch? How far does that go? Does it go to the Jets? Because he's not winning with the Jets. He said Keaton Slovis is a winner. Well, Keaton Slovis didn't win in high school. Now, is it just about elevating your team? Then, yes, I think you would say that. And, you know, I think you could make that claim about Delora and Darnold and Slovis and Neuer from Colorado. I think they are elevating their teams. But then I think you need a different terminology than just being a winner, because, you know, winners win. And that's, you know, in the W column. And there's times when some of those guys he's mentioned have not won.
Clay Helton being hyperbolic? What?
I'm just saying, Keely knows this. Semantics are important. You got to choose the right words.
He says it to me all the time, and it's annoying.
Shotgun, am I a winner?
I mean, you've managed to get on this podcast, so you're doing something right.
Ooh.
That's more like a weasel. I weasel
hey,
my way in.
Weasel, winner, those are similar words, right?
It's a
those
W.
Six letters starts with a W.
Yeah.
See, he came up with that six letters right on the spot. I would have had to take an extra 2 seconds to make sure that was correct.
Okay, Chris, if you keep hyping up Shotgun, I'm going to have to take you off this podcast. We have a strict damage his ego rule here on the podcast.
Look, I felt like I was rough on Shotgun last week. We set him up in that sting. I just want to pay back.
No.
He's glowing this week. I just want to hype him
up. He said stock neutral. It's
did
like,
not.
Oh my gosh, Chris, you're no help at all.
I play both sides of the fence.
It's horrible.
This week I'm on a Shotgun side. We're at a barbecue. I'm on his side of the fence.
Horrible. I hate it. Now, Chris, this is something I asked Shotgun and Ryan on Tunnel Vision, so I'm going to ask you. A week off for Keaton, does that help him or hurt him if it's a mental thing that has been happening with him this season?
I think it would be a helpful thing. Just because you have more time to kind of slow down, reevaluate, but at the same time, as I was about to say, think about it a little more, get your mind right. But also it could hurt you because you're thinking about it more and then it just leads to more. It's a slippery slope with that when you have more time to think about it. But I would lean towards him being able to kind of reset, watch the tape of the first 3 weeks, get a little bit more confidence with the week off. So I would probably be in the category of, I think it can help him.
My quick take would be that because of the week that it was a Thanksgiving weekend and a holiday weekend, and you know, there's just other stuff going on around the program with the testing and all that stuff, that he's not constantly thinking about his own game. I think that it creates that separation to give you that mental break. So I think that I agree with Chris that I think it's a positive if that is indeed what is ailing him.
Now, sources say that Washington State will be trying to play defense this season. What are you guys expecting Keaton Slovis and USC's offensive skill players to face on Sunday?
They did try to play defense before, just Mike Leach didn't care if they did or not.
Okay. Maybe that's the difference there.
No, I think they got some quality players there. They're doing some different things with their safeties and whatnot, using them as hybrid guys, and Jihad Woods in the middle is a veteran guy. They've got some veterans, but USC should be able to put up yards and put up points against this defense. They just don't have the quality of depth there. And again, we expect them to be back healthy, but we'll see where they are. Rolovich said earlier this week, they expect to travel 74 players, which is the limit, but that doesn't mean that they're all 74 scholarship guys. So we'll see who's on the field with them, if everyone's out of quarantine and, you know, positive tests and contact tracing and all that stuff for them. And the same thing with USC. You know, on paper, they should be able to put up yards and points against them, but who's going to be playing for that offensive line? How in sync is the offensive line for USC and the offense, you know, going up against a Washington State team that they don't get to prep for the same way? Clay Helton said this week that, you know, that they wouldn't be able to have a regular scout team periods and stuff. They would have to use their, you know, first and second string guys to do scout team work instead of having walk-ons in the third string and freshmen and young guys that they would normally would because of the numbers, you know, the number issues with some guys still coming back. Now they did get, he did say earlier today, they got their first players back from the positive testing and stuff yesterday. So the first guys that were in quarantine or tested positive were coming back yesterday. So that means they're starting to work their way back in, and they've got a couple days of practice left before the game. So so the quicker they get guys back, the better. But they won't get everyone back before Sunday. So trying to figure out how they can get everyone on the same page is going to be the big question.
And one guy I am excited to kind of see on Washington State's defensive side is the former USC commit, Jalen Watson, the JUCO cornerback. I know Shotgun was kind of an intriguing fan of him when we saw him at practice. Real long guy. He was the JUCO All-American. Apparently he's, you know, having a pretty good season over there in the time he's gotten so far this season. But coming back to L.A., coming back to his former committed team, so I'm excited to see what a long corner can do against, you know, these talented USC wide receivers. But like you said, on paper, USC has all the talent advantage over these guys, so they should be able to move the ball.
Yeah, that's a great point, Chris. You know, I am intrigued to see what Jalen Watson can do. I mean, he's a 6'3 cornerback. So we'll see, you know, how he matches up going up against a guy like a Brew McCoy or going up against Tyler Vaughns or Drake London, depending on where they try to put him. So he's an interesting player. I was intrigued by what he could do for USC. Unfortunately, it didn't work out there for them with some grades and different things there, getting his transcripts passed along. So he ends up at Washington State after an extra semester, I believe it was, at JUCO. So now we'll see how USC fares against him.
And he's a legitimate 6'3", it looks like.
Yeah, he's faced 9 passes so far this season and given up 45 yards receiving. So not that much. He's given up some receptions, but, you know, pretty short yardage area stuff.
And they have the former Washington commit, Aiden Hector, over there, who's kind of like a bounce back, who's also playing big minutes for them. So some talent in the secondary.
Yeah, and Hector obviously is a USC legacy and a guy that USC recruited early on but kind of faded away from a little bit, you know, son of Zuri Hector as well. So he has an opportunity. He's getting that early playing time and making the most of it. He's created some turnovers for him.
Now, I know you guys aren't sounding on the whole too high about this Washington State defense, but do you grade this on a curve considering there might be some issues with USC's offensive line? I know Clay Helton said that they're kind of scaling things back as to not overwhelm some of the younger players that might have to get significant playing time. How much does that cancel out the advantage that USC may have or would have normally?
I'm not putting it on the curve just because Graham Harrell and Helton have been hyping up these backup offensive linemen since the offseason. So put your money where your mouth is. I expect these guys to come out there and world beat. Beat those worlds.
Yeah, but I'm not listening to that hype. I don't believe that they're going to be able to step in and just dominate like some people wanted to make it sound like during training camp. I think the important thing to note is those two players that Chris brought up, Jalen Watson, Aiden Hector, getting immediate playing time because there's not much depth and not much talent on that Washington State defense as a whole. So the fact that, you know, a true freshman is stepping in and playing immediately and getting a lot of playing time. A JUCO guy steps in immediately and playing a lot of time. They have a couple of older guys like Woods, but, you know, on the whole, they just don't have a lot of talented depth.
But to give you a serious answer, it just depends for me who's out on that offensive line or who didn't get a lot of practice time. Like if it's Elijah Vera Tucker and maybe you have to go with Casey Collier, well, then pack it up. We can go home. That game's over. It's done. But if it's an interior guy, maybe we get to see a little Cortland Ford or maybe a little Justin Dedich inside a guard. Well, now I'm a little bit more intrigued. But yeah, you can't lose your first round left tackle. That's going to change the whole outcome. I think they can get by with an interior, maybe on a right tackle of Jalen McKenzie. At center, you know you have Dietrich there to fill in wherever they might have to plug in holes, but it can't be left tackle. Anyone but left tackle.
And it'll be interesting to see how Washington State, once they see if USC is missing any players, you know, how they try to attack certain areas, or if USC is back, if they just try, you know, how the Washington State front just tries to attack in general, considering USC hasn't had the ability to practice together, and maybe the communication may be a little off, to, you know, early in the game, especially.
In that sense, how do you guys see this one going? I know Ryan like flirted with the idea of an upset, and then was like, no, it's not going to be an upset. What are y'all predicting on Sunday afternoon? Have fun. It's like a little afternoon soiree. I don't know. That's not a soiree, but you know what I mean.
I prefer Sunday ice cream social.
Oh, fun.
So what, USC is a, what, 14-point favorite in this one, which seems, I wouldn't say upset alert, but I think it's going to be a closer game than people are anticipating, just because I think that offense is really good. I think they'll give USC problems in the first half. I think Orlando will make those adjustments and USC can kind of pull away, but it's all going to depend on how this offense is moving with Keaton Slovis. If we get a little bit closer to Keaton of last year, late last season, I think this is going to be a little bit of a pull away and run away with it at the second half. But if that offense is still kind of out of sync, deep passes aren't playing well, I think it's going to be a little bit closer than what probably people are thinking.
I mean, what is USC's record as a double-digit favorite under Clay Helton? It's not, you know, covering the spread is not good. So they've even had some outright losses in those. I think that USC will win this game. I don't think they'll cover. I feel like it'll be around an 8-point game, but I feel like it won't feel that close. I feel like there's maybe even a back end cover coming from Washington State, late field goal, late touchdown, just to get inside that spread. But I think that USC should win this game. They should win it pretty handily and feel comfortable winning it, even though, and they'll, you know, I said the score would be 35-27. That's right around where USC's been scoring. So, you know, the game will play out. USC will score 35 points, and then fans will be like, they didn't do this well. They still didn't do this well. And Clay Helton afterwards will say, oh, we feel like we could have put up 40 or 50. We're disappointed. You know, that our drives were stopping and whatnot. And it'll just be kind of a redux, but you know, they'll take care of business and get the win.
I hate how accurate that sounded. I just know that's going to happen. It's going to be like, yeah, it was a win. It wasn't very satisfying. They left points on the board. Okay, move on to UCLA. What's happening next? It's just going to be what this season has been so far. You know, just kind of shrug, add it to the W column, continue.
And now that you've said that, we're going to get USC. I mean, we're going to get Washington State, UCLA from last year. Dramatic comeback. You know, each team scores 60-something points.
See, but dramatic comeback would still fit into USC's 2020. So,
yeah, but if it's 65-63, like that game was last year, I think.
So. Yeah, no, that was a basketball game. That was not good. Hopefully it's not that. Just jumping into Twitter questions, because Shotgun sent out a tweet during the podcast for Twitter questions. JP says, chances that Elijah Vera Tucker and Marlon Tuipulotu opt out for the remainder of the season?
Are these quick takes? Or are we doing...
Yeah, let's do quick takes.
I don't think there's a high chance. I mean, the guys you're seeing opting out are with guys with losing teams or teams that are just like limping towards the end. USC is in position to win the Pac-12 title. I think these guys are staying in. They're making money by how well the tape that they're putting up. So I don't think there's a high chance that'll happen.
This is an idea that I kind of had from before the season was even started, is that when they moved the schedule back and said, hey, you're going to play this, when any of the players were opting out, I'm like, why not give it a go? And then, you know, after a few games, if you can show what you think you're capable of, that extra tape is so valuable. A guy like Jay Toffoli could have done something similar here. Just play a couple games and see how the situation plays out. I thought that would be an interesting, you know, way to go about it. You're seeing, like Chris said, the guys that are opting out right now are guys that are on losing teams, or something is happening inside the organization that they've decided they don't want to be a part of it anymore. They're just going to go ahead and focus on their NFL draft stuff, which USC's two guys, USC's still in position to win that Pac-12 championship. They're moving towards that, and I think those guys will stick around. Both of them, just the character that they are, that's something that both of them have said that they want to do, and that's what they're striving for. So I wouldn't expect either one of them to opt out. But it is something that I caught in the back of my mind a little bit last week when, you know, the game was canceled. Like, maybe if you've shown enough, like Elijah Vera Tucker and Marlon Tuipulotu both have done so far the first three games, maybe now's the time where you just go, this virus and stuff is too much. I just want to focus on me and getting ready for the draft next year. So it's something I thought about. So I thought it was a very good question, but I don't think is going to happen.
Believe it or not, that was a quick take, folks.
You encourage this. This is your doing.
Don't stop me from showing my love to Shadi.
I will. I can and I will.
When we do the Helium Boys podcast, I let them go on and on. I go snuggle up with a book and just let them go.
Anyway, moving on, we had a tweet from Vegas Werner. Who does USC match up best against in a potential Pac-12 final? Oregon or UW?
I would listen. I just think from I guess the question is for field matchups, but I think USC would want to face Oregon because of the recruiting impact it would play. You want to go up against the team that schooled you last year on the recruiting trail, that's taken all your talent. You want to go out and play those guys. I know Washington has done the same thing to them, and that would also be a pretty big win for the recruiting the world of the Pac-12, but I think you need to slay Oregon. You need to take them down. And it would be a huge recruiting win for them to do it in the Pac-12 title game. So I'm going to go with Oregon with that one.
That's interesting. I think that's a great reason why you would want to face Oregon. And because there's some little bit of animosity there between the staffs and the players and whatnot. It's hard to say which one is a better fit. I think Washington's defense is playing much better. So I think that, you know, Oregon becomes a better fit for USC because their offense hasn't gotten fully going. But I think that Oregon has a better chance of getting better as the season progresses. So it's an interesting dilemma, which team you would want to face necessarily. I think you would want to take Washington because you would say, oh, they'll be undefeated at that time. So for the grand scheme of the season and national reputation, I think you want Washington to be able to beat Oregon and then play them because they would be ranked higher as an undefeated team. So it would look better for your resume. But like you said, Chris, with the way that recruiting has gone the last couple of years, I think USC would much rather face Oregon and beat them.
That would be the statement win.
Now, this has the potential to be a full-on ramble answer, so shotgun, I'm putting you on notice. Therese sent us a tweet that said, what's with the flurry of decommitment? Seems to be happening across the board, not just USC.
I mean, I'll go real quick, and then Chris can ramble if you want. That it's 2020, and because it's been a year since players have been able to do official visits, so I think it's more difficult to assess players because the players are not playing. And I think it's been more difficult for players to assess colleges and how much they enjoy the college and how much the coaching staff really likes them without, you know, face-to-face interaction.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head, which, like USC's recent decommit, Josh Moore has never visited USC. Never got on campus, probably did Zoom calls, but other than that, he just committed to a school he'd never been to. But again, remember, look at what month it is. It's December. We have the early signing period coming up, so now the class is shifting and shuffling a little bit because you got to get your spots ready for those kids that you got to save the space for kids that you think you can sign after that. You know, USC still has some big fish out there. Sierra Wright, the Loyola cornerback. Corey Foreman, obviously, the major guy still on the board. He's not signing until January, I believe. And then Rajon Davis. LSU commit linebacker Mata Day. He's still considering USC despite the commitment. So you got some big fish out there. You need to hold some spots. So you're going to see a lot of shifting with classes all over the country with the early signing period like 3 weeks away.
Yeah, you also have JT Tuimoloa up in Washington as another big fish that USC would love to get in. Corey Foreman told Greg Biggins this week that he's actually going to sign during the early signing period, not announce until January. So that could be – it's going to be interesting how this dynamic plays out of who does sign during the early signing period, because we've seen pretty much, you know, 90-95% of the top players have signed early, but it may be different this year just because of the restrictions on where teams have been able, or where players have been able to visit, and, you know, seeing what a team is able to do, who's leaving. You know, normally you have a much better idea if you're a freshman coming in of who's leaving. Whereas now, with everyone getting an extra year of eligibility, you don't necessarily know. Some seniors may just want to move on in their career to, you know, something else. Others may want to hang around for another year. We'll see. You know, there's a lot of unknowns differently than there are a normal season.
And if fans recall what Corey is doing, or signing during the early signing period, keeping it a secret and then announcing on January, that's the same play Chris Steele, Brew McCoy, and Gary Bryant did 2 years ago at the All-American game. So that was a fun thing to cover.
Yeah, I think we even saw Talanoa Hufanga, I think, was one of the first ones to do that, actually. You know, we saw the emoji pop up from Eric Ziskin, former USC staff member. And it was like, oh, there's another one. Does that mean it's Talanoa? Does that not mean it's Talanoa? And he wasn't announcing until January, so kept everyone guessing a little bit.
We need a name for that.
You know, the cloaked signing, maybe? I don't know.
Or we're just going to call it a Hufanga.
A Hufanga.
Ooh, I like that too. One of the first to do it.
Okay, we have one more tweet, and that's from Chris. Not you, Chris. It's a different Chris. And he says, question, would you prefer a white elephant gift or a secret Santa gift? Keep up the great work. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
This is a great take-it-or-leave-it-based question, so I appreciate that Chris is asking this, and it's a perfect segue into take-it-or-leave-it. But white elephant or secret Santa, I think I've done both. I think I did a white elephant in middle school. I don't remember what the outcome was. But I would say I prefer secret Santa, because the person – I would prefer to do a secret Santa, not necessarily receive that gift. I like thinking about the person and kind of figuring out what they would like. One time I did get an expired Blockbuster gift card, so it does have its drawbacks, especially if you get a lazy person. But I'm going to go with Secret Santa and not White Elephant.
Sorry, Chris. That's the only thing I had around last year.
Look, man, I don't even know how you got one.
Yeah, if it was last year, that's a nice score. That's like a relic.
That's retro.
Yeah.
I'm going White Elephant. I think that it's fun. I like the White Elephant concept of being able to give a gift and then steal a gift away, the whole concept there. You know, my family would do an alcohol swap with White Elephant where you can steal things away, which makes it fun because everyone gets alcohol, so it's all fun and games then. But the key to any good White Elephant gift is bring something that you want. You know, don't bring something you think someone's going to want. Just bring something you want so then you can fall back on just grabbing your own gift.
How did you make this question a teaching moment? Everything.
Every moment's a teaching moment.
Apparently with you.
Because shotgun's the best. Chris...
Especially if the white elephant is a wrapped white elephant, which makes it a lot more complicated.
Yeah. No, see, I agree with you, sort of. Shotgun, but I'm going to go with the Chris route. Secret Santa, because then you can think about someone, plan that, and then you get a gift that isn't going to be stolen from you, and you don't have to go through that heartbreak. So Secret Santa all the way.
See, I don't like Secret Santa because I'm very difficult to buy for, because my family tells me, because if I want something, I just go get it. I don't wait around to see if someone else is going to buy it for me.
I'm 100% just buying you a Lids gift card.
That always works.
See,
you don't know what to get someone, gift cards are usually the way to go.
But he does have his hat size in his bio, so it's kind of really easy for you, Chris.
Oh, then I get him one with my face on it.
I mean, you actually should. That would be great. Just saying. And now he just did a visual bit. There you go,
Chris.
And
on the back, it's got to have hashtag Family Feud Pod.
Yeah. Oh.
I went so far without...
The visual bit. I'm proud of you. You went pretty far. On that note, Chris, I'll toss it over to you. Take it or leave it. Take it away.
Yeah, I was so disappointed. Actually, I wasn't disappointed because I didn't have to do another corporate take it or leave it. But here we are. Apparently, I messed up our presenting sponsor 2 weeks ago. It had to get cut, so I apologize to Waffle House, our presenting sponsor. We're probably banned from all Waffle Houses.
No, because we cut it out.
Yeah, it was cut out because I messed up the read. I just want to say I apologize.
Okay, to our fake sponsor. Yes, continue.
Yes. Thank you to this week's sponsor, Cheese Nips. Look, we realize our product is widely inferior to Cheez-Its, but please give us another chance. You're already reaching for the box. Just reach slightly to the right. Take a chance on Cheese Nips this holiday season and leave behind cheese-based snack stereotypes. Nice nips, bro. Thanks. They're cheese.
Chris, when do you think about these things?
Did I break it?
It meaning shotgun?
When Shotgun recovers from his laughing fit, we move on to our USC take it or leave it. Before we get into the fun stuff.
Tears.
Marlon Tuipulotu is the front runner for the defensive player of the year.
National?
Pac-12 or USC or yeah, national Pac-12, Pac-12, or West Pac-12.
Okay,
of course,
I was like,
of course USC, he's the front runner, but Pac-12.
I'm going to say take it because I haven't watched enough of the rest of the Pac-12 yet, and I know Shotgun's going to come after me and say something good that will back up what I'm saying. So there you go.
Shotgun has every defensive player's PFF grade right on hand.
He's going to read it off his head, top of his head,
yeah,
right now.
The problem is Marlon Tuipulotu is playing great. The problem is there's a guy in Washington, Zion Tuipulotu-Fatui, who has 7 sacks, 1 fumble recovery, and 3 fumbles forced, along with 13 tackles in 3 games. So it's going to be hard for anyone to surpass him already if he just sits on those stats the rest of the season. I mean, those are outstanding numbers right there for ZTF, as they call him up in Seattle. So Marlon Tuipulotu is playing really well. He's going to have to create some more turnovers before he can, you know, can reel in that reel in ZTF and the stats that he's already put up.
Wow, that really blew up in Keely's face, and I enjoyed that.
Okay. I usually either have to go before or after, and this is one of those where I should have just waited, let him look up the stats and been like, yep, completely agree, thought that as well.
But if Marlon does win, if they win the Pac-12, you're going to look really good, Keely.
Yeah, because everyone will remember that 20 seconds I said in this podcast.
What's going to be interesting with any kind of awards this season, whether it be national or conference awards, is how number of games plays in. You know, even at the conference level, you know, Arizona State so far, they played 1 game. If they get 1 more game in, how many awards can you actually win if you play 2 games? Even if you ball out and have 3 interceptions in 1 game and a couple of fumbles you recovered in another game, do you get the benefit of the doubt that you would have produced that in a couple more games or not? It's hard to say.
Moving on. A little news this week was that Chase McGrath entering the transfer portal. So Parker Lewis, officially the man moving forward. The freshman, Lewis, is on his way to, at minimum, a second team All Pac-12 selection.
I'm going to take it. You know, I think that he's putting up solid numbers so far. And as long as he keeps making field goals, then I think that he's going to be up there because USC should continue to score points. And their offense has struggled in the red zone. So
I was going to say, or struggle in the red zone.
I said points. I didn't say touchdowns.
You're right.
Yeah, I'll have to go with Shotgun on that one. This is one where it's nice going behind him again.
The Washington State and Arizona State's kickers, Blake Mazza and Christian Zendejas, are both averaging 2 field goals made per game and have not missed one. However, they haven't played many games. So we'll see how that factors in, just like I just said.
Moving on, CBS dropped a new first-round mock draft yesterday. AVT, the number 11 overall selection. Are you, based on this trajectory, AVT will be a top 10 pick when it's all said and done? You laughed at me when I said he would be drafted higher than Austin Jackson on my take it or leave it a couple weeks ago. Where do you stand now?
You're a thought leader, Chris Shavina. What do you mean by where I stand now? Is this reevaluating your initial question, or
no,
should I still
I'm
laugh at you? Because
question,
I'll always
AVT
take that.
Will be a top 10 pick. You're taking it?
No, I was taking laughing at you.
Oh, yeah, that's a given. That's a take it or take it.
Yeah, exactly. I actually will take it. He is catching people's eyes. And by people, I mean scouts. The scout tweets were popping after Utah, so I'll take it on that reason alone.
I'm going to leave it just because I think that there's going to be three quarterbacks potentially taken in the top 10. So it's just the number game there. I'm going to take it that I think he might be 11 to 20.
And coincidentally, he was taken by the Miami Dolphins. So that would reunite him with Austin Jackson, which I thought was pretty cool.
Well, look at that.
And the thing is that Elijah Vera Tucker, you know, obviously tackles are valued more than interior players, even though interior players can go pretty high in the draft. You're not getting, you know, guards aren't being selected number one overall, whereas tackles still are. So he's going to get knocked just a little bit because of that, too, even if he is the top interior guy in the draft.
This one is mainly for Shotgun. So, Keely, you can sit this one out if you want. It's a USC basketball question. Just because we're in the midseason of or getting started with basketball, Evan Mobley gives his team a higher ceiling than last year with Big O.
I'm going to take it. I think this team has a higher ceiling. I don't know if I would necessarily say Evan Mobley gives them one versus Onyeka.
That's the question. Take it. That's, you're modifying what the actual question is. I'm taking it, but changing the premise of the question. Then you're leaving it.
No, he said the team has a higher ceiling. He said it's because of Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley is so skilled. He's such a unique big man. It's just a different type of dynamic with him and Big O. But I think the parts around him, the length that USC has on the defensive end is you know, can be very, very good this year. So I think the ceiling's a little bit higher because Big O is great and is going to contribute on both ends of the court and be a playmaker with his dunks and stuff. But Evan Mobley is a game changer and gives him a higher ceiling because he's a guy that you can throw the ball to and he can make shots over anyone. So he can take over a game potentially on the offensive end, which Big O couldn't necessarily do.
My last USC one is kind of a fun one. Aaron Kromahook will finish equal or with more touchdowns than Amon-Ra St. Brown in the regular season.
I'm taking it. He's got a 2-0 advantage.
Wait, hold up. This is redemption time. Hello. Y'all have flamed me for having Eric Kromahook on Most Important. I had him as 30, okay? And I get so much grief for it. And look at that. Look at where this question has taken us.
And for the record, I will continue to flame you.
Yeah, but hello. That's, come on.
Are you taking it or leaving it, Keely? Just answer the question. Stop trying to change the topic.
Give me a second. I'm looking up USC's receiving stats.
She's looking up the stats.
Amon-Ra has 0 touchdowns. Kromahook has 2.
That's crazy. I had not recognized that. That's a good job, Chrissy T. I just don't want to count out Amon-Ra St. Brown, so I have to leave it. I have to leave it.
Right, he could go for a 3 tuggies this
week.
Yeah,
he could literally do anything, and I'd be like, yep, that sounds right.
And then Kromahook could go for 4. It'd be crazy.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
I'm going to take it because Eric Kromahook has a 2-0 advantage, and because all of USC's passing touchdowns, for the most part, have been in the middle of the field, and Amon-Ra St. Brown is playing on the outside. So unless USC goes with more 4 wide receiver sets and they push Amon-Ra St. Brown inside with Brew McCoy outside, then he's not getting those interior chances. That's where Keaton Slovis is throwing all his touchdown passes right now, Drake London, even the one that Tyler Vaughn's over the middle. The one exception off the top of my head is the batted ball touchdown to Brew McCoy. So everything's going over the middle, and that's where USC's finding their success in the red zone.
Okay.
And Madsen's, can I jump in for 2 seconds, Chris? Sorry.
Yeah, of course.
Taking the baton back. Does that mean this is kind of a wasted opportunity for Amon-Ra St. Brown since he's not in the slot more? Are we missing more flashy Amon-Ra St. Brown plays that we've come to know just because he's on the outside now?
I think so, but I think we talked about it on this podcast 2 weeks ago or something, but scouts want to see him play outside. So I think he's getting that tape. It's not leading to the production that he would have as a slot, but I think he's still helping his case by showing he can play outside, if that makes sense.
And there's also the factor, the Keaton Slovis factor. If Slovis gets back to where he was last year, then you can do a little bit more with the offense. And I think he has more confidence to fit some of those tight windows on the outside. He throws that deep ball a little bit better instead of throwing up a couple of wobblers that he's thrown to Amon-Ra St. Brown on the outside, where there's been opportunities for him to make big plays as well.
Okay, that wraps up the USC ones. Let's get into the fun ones.
Wraps up the corporate ones.
Yeah, thank you, Cheese Nips, for sponsoring the USC Take It or Leave It. I will continue to buy Cheez-Its, but thank you for the sponsorship. Keely, this one is unique because I know both of us are leaving this one. This one is for Shotgun only. He mentioned it this week, and I just know it needed to be mentioned on the pod. So, Shotgun, you are, I know you're taking it, corn on pizza. What the heck? Yeah. What the heck?
Yes, yeah, so I'm taking corn on pizza in high school, in high school setting primarily. When you get the rectangle pizza, you know, almost every time there was corn that came the same day, and I would put it on top because the pizza that you get in high school is not great, so it needs some extra toppings.
It's disgusting.
No, it's not. You never tried it. How do you even know? Are it gives you, an extra you, crunch.
Ew.
Are you draining it? Because if you're talking about like lunch corn like kernels and the
cafeteria yeah. corn is soggy and mushy on mushy
not,
rectangle
it's not
pizza.
Cream corn?
But it's like it's not firm. It's not like fresh off the cob.
It can be firm. I will say that, but I do not trust cafeteria corn. Like corn at a nice buffet. Plum kernels are popping, but I don't know about a cafeteria corn.
Yeah, that's a definite leave it for me, Chris, just in case you weren't clear.
If anyone is listening and they do this.
Try it. Try it out. I've done it. It will make your own pizzas at home and stuff. It's still quality. Quality stuff.
I'm willing to try it. I will try it for the name of science and take it or leave it, just to see. But if anyone else does this, I need you to tweet at us because this seems insane. And I've never heard about this before.
Hey, we did get a tweet last week. Someone tried your Cool Whip pumpkin pie theory, Chris. So you're one for one.
And I bet they changed their life.
Sure.
This is another one where I'm putting Shotgun on the spotlight because I need you to settle this. I know Keely's leaving it. I'm taking it. But Five Guys.
Taking. I like Five Guys, especially their fries. They give you way too many, which I'm always a fan of.
Okay. I've only been to Five Guys like twice prior to my gluten-free timing. But it's just, you walk in, there's peanuts everywhere. Like, what is happening? I just don't.
Hey, they give you free stuff. Why are you complaining about it? They give you extra fries in the bag. They don't just, you know, they don't skimp on it. You don't open your bag and pull out the cart and you're like, where's the other half of it?
Sure,
they give you
okay.
extra peanuts while you're sitting there waiting. You know, you can get extra toppings. They have a bunch of other stuff. You can get Cajun seasoning on the fries. I'm in for Five Guys.
Okay, that's fine. This is not...
You
I'm not,
sold me on it more, Keely.
This usually happens. No, I'm not passionate about this, take it or leave it. I think I can't even really weigh in because I haven't had like a real experience lately.
Not the best burger ever, but great experience. You know, when you get free stuff, it's you know, you add to it. Now, the question is, now during quarantine, you don't get free peanuts and whatnot, I guess. You
sound like a little sad elephant over there.
The biggest sad elephant. Christmas decorations.
Just in general?
Is that simple?
Are you people that put up Christmas decorations? I personally leave it. I don't give a shit.
I literally have like an 8-foot tree in my apartment right now. We went all out. And if you go on the USC Athletics YouTube, you can see part of my Christmas decorations when I ask a question to Clay Helton. So there you go.
Personally, I would leave it. Now, I like Christmas decorations, but as far as putting them up, like you say, Chris, you know, personally, I would not. But as an individual, but my roommate has a child, so there are Christmas decorations all over the place. I like Christmas lights and stuff. I like blue lights particularly. I like
great
police lights. I'm talking about blue Christmas lights.
Now I'm just imagining you sitting in your apartment eating corn on pizza, a couple Five Guys fries, looking at blue Christmas lights,
watching the you know the Christmas tree lighting after the NFL game because the NFL game got pushed for a Christmas tree lighting.
That was so disorienting. I was sitting nude on a Wednesday being like, today Sunday? I was very confused.
And the fact that it said Sunday Night Football on the actual TV guide programming.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping they filmed an entire like Wednesday Night Football opening theme song with Carrie. Wednesday Night Football.
It's what's on right now.
Does
not
it's
what you
day.
Waited for. Wow,
hump day? Hump day football?
Yeah, get the camel in there. Get that Geico. Is that Geico? Get that Geico sponsorship. Could have made a lot of money there, but no.
Or they could have just done a fake sponsorship like you, Chris.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, my last one is, I know Keely's answer, it's Magic. And I know Keely is leaving it because while in, where did we travel to? Arizona, I tried to do Magic for her and she did not give a shit.
No,
she
no.
could not be bothered.
Hold on. He tried to make me do complicated Magic after the game while I'm editing and hangry. And I was like, my attention span was of an ant at that point, and I could
and
not.
By complicated direction, I meant memorize this card.
It's too much for me.
I did the trick, and she could not give a shit. She literally could not care.
I think I pulled the card and said, why do I care? And
Why do I care?
He walked away.
I've been practicing my Magic all quarantine, and that's...
So
all I'm saying is... Upcoming magicians do not perform for Keely. She does not care.
Not in work mode while I'm hangry, please. That's all. I appreciate it, Chris. I'm sorry.
I don't know what the take or leave it is, actually.
Do you like Magic? Are you taking Magic? Are you leaving it?
I take Magic.
You do not take Magic. You crush Magic.
I will take it. I'm a Houdini fan as a history person. I really liked Harry Houdini, so...
I hope your roommate and her child like the Houdini as well.
I did get to go to Magic Castle last year, which was really cool to experience at least.
I also went to Magic Castle. It's great.
I would like to point out that all these non-corporate, you didn't even need me to be here because you answered them for me. Why was I here for these?
Because as the theme of the show, it's all about Shotgun today.
Apparently.
So why don't you butt out?
Okay.
This was supposed to be a Helium Boys podcast.
Oh my
this
God.
Isn't even my birthday. This is great.
No.
And that is all my take it or leave it. And once again, thank you to our corporate sponsor, Cheese Nips. Go pick up yourself some Cheese Nips, I guess, if you want. But two cheeses.
Okay. Anyway, thanks, Chris, for your odd sponsorship plug there that we're not getting any money from. As I promised at the top of the show, we have a turnover traveler update. Chris, tell the people first your idea. And what's the latest?
Yeah, for any new listeners of the podcast, I had this idea to replace the turnover sword that the defensive players get when they get a turnover or whatever. I did not personally like it. I pitched a turnover traveler, which is basically a mini traveler, a mini pony that looks like Traveler, that the player who gets the turnover gets to ride around up and down the sideline. Bada bing, bada boom. You know, there was a
terrific idea, obviously. Unfortunately, wouldn't be allowed this year because there's no live mascots, but working to get this in the future.
Well, update.
Well, this is the update that people were kind of fearing, the logistics of it. I spoke with Joanne Asman, who is the owner / I assume trainer of Traveler, the one that they use at games. Ryan Abraham had her on his podcast, and I jokingly asked him if he could ask her about the possibility of a turnover traveler. You know, she owns Traveler, horses, she's in horses, seemed like a perfect question. It was mainly asked as a joke, but then Ryan sends me her phone number. She says she might be able to help. I know you're getting all excited, but let's slow down. So I called her. Like a couple weeks back, this was like going into the Arizona State game, and she didn't really understand what I was asking. It was like a kid, me being the kid, asking for this ridiculous request, and I knew it wasn't going to be feasible, but she was taking it very seriously, which I did appreciate, even though I am a moron, and you could tell by the way I was talking about it that I'm a moron. But she basically said, oh, this would never work. You cannot have... You cannot ride a horse. And I'm like, yes, I know. I know you can't ride a mini pony. Because the other thing is, she said, legally, they cannot have another traveler. There's only one true traveler. There's no others. No other imitations, not even a mini traveler. This is why they don't have a traveler mascot at basketball games, apparently.
But they do.
She said they used to.
Oh, they don't anymore?
They took him out back and shot him.
Oh, the original. Oh, when they brought the giant headed mascot out.
Yeah.
That is true. There was a horse mascot at the same time. and there now no longer is.
Apparently, that's a no-no. There's only one true traveler.
Interesting.
All imitations will be shot on site. Those are my words, not hers.
That's a very important distinction. Now, hold on. Here's my question. So you genuinely called her and asked about this?
I generally talk to a woman about the idea of a turnover traveler, knowing full well it is the stupidest question she's probably had to face in her career. And to her credit, she did sort of talk it out with me, even though I said at the top, look, I know this is stupid. I'm just doing it for the sake of doing it because I'm never going to have the opportunity to ever ask the traveler owner about this possibility. I had to ask. So apparently they do at her farm or her stable, they do have a mini white horse. Her name is Crystal. They jokingly call her Mini Traveler. And then I made a joke about it, like, oh, that would be perfect. And she was like, no, no traveler. And I was like, all right, no, I get it. We can't do that. I was just a joke. This is a joke.
Oh my gosh.
But apparently she has a, you know, like those sticks you ride with the horse head?
Yes.
Yeah.
She has one of those with a traveler. So you could ride that instead of an actual horse, which you could never get away with.
It's the next best thing to seeing Brandon Peely on an actual mini pony, right? So, I mean, we gotta make this happen now, I feel like.
The stick or the actual pony?
The stick, obviously. I mean, this is the plausible portion of it. The other portion of it was Chris asking for a unicorn for his birthday and to an actual horse handler and then being like, ah, you know, unicorns aren't real, right?
That's exactly, no. That's just exactly what it was. That's exactly a perfect metaphor.
Wait, did that happen? Or are you saying that's a metaphor?
That's exactly what my request was like. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah, he asked for a unicorn. And, you know, this is a unicorn thought for there to be a turnover traveler. It still needs to happen. But if we can't actually get the horse out there, I don't know if you asked her, you know, does Crystal, you know, ever, you know, does anyone ever ride Crystal or not? You know, are there small children that do? Is there a weight limit? Is Brandon Peely within that weight limit? These are the questions that needed to be asked, Chris. But since it doesn't seem like it's feasible, then, hey, we got to get the horse head on a stick at least to the sideline and give him the option. Hey, either take the horse head or the sword, whichever one you want, you know?
But are you saying we hire a child actor that looks like Brandon Peely and put him on Crystal? Is that what you're saying? Because I love it. Because, goddammit, I love it.
My question is, can the horse stick be a traveler horse stick? Like, can the one true Trojan thing, can it be a stick traveler?
I don't think legally you can call it traveler.
It can be Traveler, as you've been saying through parts of this.
I think you don't name it. You know, there's no name to the sword. It's not the turnover sword or anything. You know, it's not a specific name.
Turnover horse stick. It rolls off the tongue. It's perfect.
I mean, we'll just hashtag it turnover traveler, but no one will be allowed to actually call it legally that. It's all about the legalities.
And the other part of this, there are tentative plans for me to visit the stable.
Wow. That's a big development.
I must meet Crystal.
Yeah, you got to meet Crystal and get a bunch of photos so that you can then post a photo of Crystal every time USC gets a turnover.
True. That's a good point.
Make a GIF.
Because here's the thing. Everyone would tweet us GIFs of a mini pony if USC got a turnover. So the legend would only grow.
And that is my turnover traveler update. Shotgun, you and I will talk off screen about getting this Brandon Peely child actor. I think we know some people in the industry. We can make this happen.
Well, once again, Chris is making it hard to wrap up a podcast, but I have to do that anyway.
Do I get to do my question?
It's go for it, Chris.
Just taking over the second half.
He
of the
really
podcast.
Is. This is Chris's pod. He's the captain now.
And before I go, I do need to make one more statement. I have been doing this podcast for several months now in quarantine. I know I am cousin of the pod. That is an official designation. But I would like for both of you, the founders of this podcast, the Family Feud podcast, I would like you both to define the relationship with me. Am I an official member of this podcast? Am I an interim member of this podcast? Are we just DTP? Are we down to pod? Is this cuffing season just for this season? And then you're going to kick me to the curb come summer. I need to know where I stand. Are we official? Or can I go with other podcasts out in the world? What I need you both to define this, because it's driving me crazy.
Shotgun, he's DTRing, and we're not talking about Dorian Thompson Robinson. He's defining the relationship. What do we do?
Oh, baby. Why we got to put titles on everything? Why is it got to be? Why is that necessary? Why can't we just have a good time and enjoy the present? Don't worry about the future.
Why are you doing a large Southern man?
I don't know. I have different voices. I don't know.
Oh, this is so hard. Chris, I'm always so awkward with my words. You know, I don't know what to say. You've been a great friend to us.
Oh no.
A great pal.
Oh no.
No, I think you've made your say, Chris. I think so. I think we're ready for this leave, Shotgun. What say you?
Let's just wait till the end of the season, guys. Let's not rush into anything. Let's see how this continues to flow. We're on a good path. Let's stay away from the titles. We don't have to. Titles are overblown. Titles are overblown. No one needs a title. Titles overrated.
Shotgun, answer me this. Are you talking to other guests?
I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying titles are overrated, like North Carolina in the college football playoff.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
And
full circle.
That is a full circle, ladies and gentlemen.
Well done. Chris, I hope you're not too deflated. I tried.
I got no answers.
That was the intended effect.
We'll see.
Alrighty. I'm scared to ask any final thoughts. I probably shouldn't. You said enough. That's going to wrap up this week's podcast. We'll see you for a Sunday afternoon game, hopefully. Knock on wood. Cross your fingers. That's Chris Trevino. That's Shotgun's Rattling. I'm Keely Orr. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye. Peace. I think.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.